This week, I received a lovely letter from a woman in Connecticut named Anne. She writes, "My son and I anxiously await For the Birds to appear on my iTunes podcast feed every week so we can listen to you after I pick him up from preschool. We are brand new bird watchers. My son, TW, has recently fallen in love with birds of all kinds. He especially loves tanagers and was so delighted by your piece on the summer tanager earlier this week, he asked me to write you for him." Anne continues, "TW tells me his best bird ever is a red-winged blackbird because on Mother's Day we went for a walk in a field, got our feet all wet, and watched red-winged blackbirds fly over our heads. Thank you so much for your wonderful show." Well, thank you, Anne, and you too, TW, for your wonderful letter. It's especially fun that 4-year-old TW loves tanagers and red-winged blackbirds because the scarlet tanager could easily be named the black-winged redbird. The summer tanager in Duluth that I talked about last week is very rare this far north, but I was down in Iowa over the weekend where I saw several. And I saw scarlet tanagers in Ohio a couple of weeks ago. I can sure understand why TW loves them. But yes, there's something about walking in a wet field where red-winged blackbirds are abundant, getting our feet soaked as red wings fly over our head, that makes encounters with them exciting and memorable. Females don't live up to their name, not being black and not having red wings, but they're beautiful in a quieter way, and they make identification more fun and challenging because they look more like gigantic sparrows than like blackbirds. When I was a teacher in Madison, Wisconsin, I used to take my bicycle to work, which involved riding through some prime red-winged blackbird habitat. One morning, I heard an odd, arrhythmic clicking sound. I couldn't figure out what it was until I looked into my rearview mirror to see a red-winged blackbird attacking my trusty old Bell bicycle helmet, which was white with red stripes. The helmet absorbed all the shock of each impact, so I couldn't feel a thing. When I took a field ornithology class in college, one of our assignments was to map out red-winged blackbird territories in a small marsh by setting out study specimens, that is, dead birds stuffed in an unnatural pose with their wings folded. We also set out some dead birds that had been stuffed by taxidermists to look more natural. We noted where they were and weren't attacked by live red wings, and we noticed whether the natural poses made a difference. They did, but study specimens with more red exposed got attacked way more than study specimens in which the red was more hidden. When I wrote for the website Journey North, I came up with a field study for students to try making red-winged blackbird action figures to see how real red wings react. I cautioned children, parents, and teachers to do this only before red wings actually start nesting, pointing out that once they're feeding babies, it's best to leave them alone to take care of their young. Learning how to do field work at a young age, with important caveats about doing it ethically, is a great way to help budding young scientists and naturalists see how it's done. The oldest red-winged blackbird on record was banded in New Jersey in 1967 and found injured in Michigan in 1983 when it was 15 years, 9 months old. It was able to be released after recovering from its injuries. The tricolored blackbird could also be called a red-winged blackbird, but it's an entirely different species, with a whitish rather than yellowish border on the red epaulets and a different call and song. This species, with its extremely limited range, found only in California's Central Valley, is declining dangerously. Fortunately, TW's good old red-winged blackbird is thriving, so he's likely to enjoy them for many, many years to come. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.